there. Our culture is disintegrating.
Hey, pass the salt. It's time.
It's time. Hey, you, pass the salt.
You know why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time. It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed in this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a Coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
I got to tell you, I get up every morning. You know, I have a routine. I'm sure you guys all have a routine as well. I get up at 5:30 in the morning and, you know, do the things you do when you get up in the morning. You go to the bathroom, shave your face. I didn't shave this morning, by the way. And then I go out and I do a little bit of prayer. And then I open up the internet and say, let's go. Where are we going here today, Lord? Where are we going here? You know, folks, I'm telling you, there's a devil loose. There's a devil loose. And the resistance of Christianity, I think it's starting to come up a little bit, but it has been, God, it's been unbelievable. Unbelievable. And you know, I was talking to Michelle, my dear wife, love of my life. And just I hate to be just a broken record. How do we get God's people involved in this mess? How is a nation of Christians being controlled by 20% Satanists, atheists, call whatever you want to? How'd that ever happen? We'll talk a little bit about that and show you kind of how it all happened today. And just want to encourage you all this morning. Hey, come on now. Come on now. Still got room. We are approaching the 100 mark for the annual coming up on July 10, 11, and 12. 100. Come on, jump in here. It's in the chat right now. Maybe you can click on that for me, Spence, real quick so I can get that out of the way. Folks, this is going to be really, really fun. First of all, the fellowship's going to be unbelievable. We've had somebody who is scholarship, who has paid for Fritz Zimmerman and some porta potties, a tent. Someone made a donation for all that stuff. And all it costs you to come is, number one, you got to get a hotel room. And I haven't been very good on this. If you're interested in looking for a hotel room, send me an email or text me right here. Liberty Mel got us for, how much is it, Mel? Are you out there, Mel? How much can they get a hotel room for, Mel?
Only from now until Thursday, and then kind of based on, you know, approval from the hotel. But I can get a rate of $89.
$89, Mel?
Plus tax, so that brings you up to around $100.
A nice place, not some flea bag hotel, right, Mel? So $100, $200, you can stay in a hotel. Your food's going to be free. Speaker's going to be free. Bring a friend. Why wouldn't you come? Come on, man. Come on. And we're excited about it. I said, we're pushing 100 and we're going to get more than that. So Fritz Zimmerman, I've gotten some interest from non-people that aren't part of the queue. You want to know what the heck's going on with the Nephilim? What are you talking about, the Nephilim? I thought those were the mound builders. I thought those were the Indian mounds, Coach. Yeah, they lied to you, didn't? Who told you that, and why do you believe them? So, folks, look, you heard Mel just say that. If you're interested in a hotel room, we got to get a hold. You got to email me, text me, whatever. I'll connect you with Mel. Got to get that done, or it's going to go up. Price is going to go up. $89 plus tax. That's pretty amazing. Is that on the screen right now, Spence? Is it up there? A lot of you say, get on with it. I ain't going to. I live in California. Get on. Okay, I'm sorry. But there are a lot of people who are a day and a half drive from it. I'm telling you, it'd be just the fellowship. It'd be worth it. So thanks to Mel for all the hard work she's doing on that and yada, yada, yada. And looking forward to seeing a lot of you there. I'm lost here on my screen, Spencer. Somehow I lost. Oh, there it is. Is that it? No, that's not it. Somehow I lost me. Anyway, maybe you can get me back up on moon. I'm doing good. We're doing good. Okay, cool. Hey, listen, something else that's going on tonight. Is it tonight? 6:30. Diana Ketterman is holding an online prayer. I don't call it vigil, prayer communion service on Tuesday the 30th. That would be tomorrow. Spencer, is that on the screen? Because it's there. Thank you. Friends, how about joining Thursday or Tuesday, tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. Diana Ketterman's inviting you to scheduled Zoom meeting. There's all the information that you need. Just get in there and be part of that prayer vigil. It's going to take place tomorrow night, 7:30 Eastern time. Just a prayer for our nation. Cool. Put that in the chat. I don't have anything put that in the chat, Spencer, but let's try to put that in the chat. I'm scrolling up. See, it's been a weekend, right? So the stuff that's going on, I'm telling you, we're in a vortex. Stuff's going on. I just off the top of my head, I actually think we might see Barack Obama charged. I think we might actually see that. I don't want to get bogged down on that today, but I'm just telling you, this stuff, something's happening here. When it is ain't exactly clear, there's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware, right? Let me ask you a question as I dive into it. It's a little bit of a, this is a day in school for you today. Stuff that I didn't know. And I'm going to try to lay it out for you real, real quickly. How America became a secular nation. Hey, Spence, look up the word secular. Secular. I didn't do that. Secular. Pertaining to this, to the present world. Or to things not spiritual or holy, relating to things not immediately or primarily respecting the soul, but the body, worldly. The secular concerns of life respect, I'm sorry, the secular concerns of life respect making provisions for the support of life, preservation of health, yada, yada, yada. Okay, so let me ask you something. Jumping off at that point, I'm going to take you on a history lesson today, real quickly. What makes something right and wrong? I'm going to pause there a minute. I want you to, today, when we go to public schools or you get pulled over by a police cop, a policeman, what makes something right or wrong? What is the standard that makes something right or wrong? I want you to pause there a second.
Laws.
Where does that come from? Where do they get a law for the government to take, I don't know, 40, 50% of your income? What makes that right? What makes that right? Where do laws come from? That's right and that's wrong. Says who? Says who? Has that always been right? That's always been wrong? You guys do know, don't you? Why did they fight the American Revolution? Does anybody know why we started? Anybody know why we started the American Revolution? Come on. Back those of you who went to school in the 60s.
What? Bags on tea.
Over taxation. Boston Tea Party. Tax. Why? Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Render unto God the things which is God. Hey, folks, we ain't got no Caesar anymore. America ain't got no Caesar anymore. Why are we paying tax? Why are we paying property taxes? Why do they charge you money? Like a sales tax. Can you imagine if every year you had to pay a sales tax on your car? Had to pay a sales tax on your boat. Had to pay a sales tax on your TV. Had to pay a sales tax on your new couch. Had to pay a sale. Can you imagine that? We wouldn't put up with that. Why do we put up with property taxes? They inflate your house. You buy your house for $70,000. 20 years later, they tell you it's worth $150,000, and they tax you on $150. $150,000, as if you made money on your house. You didn't make any money on your house. If you want to duplicate your house, it costs $150,000 to get a house like you got. You didn't make any money. And especially you haven't made any money if you haven't cashed in on it. But we got a lot of rescheduling, rethinking of the American mind. That's why I want to take you on a trip here today. Before we do, let me pause a second. Anybody for the good of the group? If you don't get it in now, you ain't gonna get it in. Okay, because I'm going somewhere. Okay, we want to talk about right and wrong today. Government, the government being the determinant of right and wrong. Trump's having some trouble with that, isn't he? Because all of a sudden he's making some executive orders. They didn't mind it when Obama made them. They didn't mind those executive orders when Joe Biden made them. But when Trump makes those executive orders, oh, they want to scream and holler and fight, don't they? Right?
Because why? Because we've lost all semblance of right and wrong. We have no common value. Time out, man. Raise your hand out to everything murder is wrong. Good. I see most of your hands up. Not really. I get it. Murder's wrong. Okay. Says who? Says who? And at what point in the world did murder become wrong? Back in the caveman days, were there really cavemen? I mean, were there really cavemen? We would call prehistoric days, right? Excuse me. One caveman conked another caveman over the head and killed him. Was that a crime? They charge him with murder? Homicide? Michelle, sounds like your toilet's running. Wait a minute. Sometimes my toilet flopper doesn't flop back. What makes something right and wrong? I'm going to take you on a journey here that just here in a second, I'm going to open your eyes to some things that we ought to all know that you probably don't know. Dave Allison's got his hand up. I'll let him jump in here real quick. Hey, stay with me. It's going to be good education for you today, okay? Stay in it. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, sorry, Coach, I put my hand up earlier when you said if anyone had anything for the good of the group, and I just want to tell people that the hotel that Mel's at, take advantage of that. That's a great hotel. And by the way, just so you know, just to tantalize you, there's some big-name celebrities that are going to be staying there, just to let you know, and you might bump into them in the hallway while you're there.
Yeah. All right, man. All right. I'll be there getting my signatures, getting my autographs. Yeah. Yeah. Folks, come on, man. Come be part of it. Be fun. Okay. So hey. Okay. Now, class. What makes stealing wrong? First, hang on. Is stealing wrong? Says who? Is being a bully wrong? Says who? Is telling a lie wrong? Says who? In fact, the government, help me out here, can't the government throw you in jail for lying on your tax form? Well, it would seem to me that lying on your tax form would just be self-preservation, wouldn't it? Why is that wrong? Why is, I don't know, raping somebody wrong? Why is homosexuality wrong? Why is disobeying your parents wrong? Are you tracking with me here? Says who? What makes something wrong? And we'll pause there a second. What makes something wrong? David Arthur put in there, morning, Dave, laws of nature. No, David. Because the Declaration of Independence says the laws of nature and of nature's God. Doesn't it, Spencer? Doesn't it say that? The laws of nature and of nature's God. If you find that, I'll send you 50 cents, Spencer. The laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. I don't know what David's referring to. Say, well, a man can't have sex with another man because of the law of nature. Why? Because the purpose of sex is not enjoyment. The purpose of sex is reproduction, procreation. Why is sex outside of marriage wrong? Why do you in the United States of America still have to get married? Although if you aren't married and you're shacking up with somebody after so many years, they consider you married. Who says you have to get married? What makes marriage right and not getting married wrong? What's the standard? Because the Bible says, can two walk together unless they agree? I look here. Victoria says morals. David Arthur says laws of nature, God's commandments. What makes something right or wrong? For instance, I, in my training, divorce is a sin in Catholicism. For better, for worse, for richer and poor, sickness, health. Now, hang on a minute. It used to be. I don't know. Well, somebody help me. Maybe it's a Catholic. I know Paul's a Catholic. Paul, can you get divorced in the Catholic Church, Paul? Are you allowed to get divorced and remarried and still be a Catholic? Because I'm telling you, back when I was a kid in the Catholic Church, couldn't do that.
An annulment, coach. You have to buy an annulment.
Yeah, you have to buy. That's right. You got to pay some money to some guy, and he'll get you out, right?
Yeah.
And David Arthur said in Matthew 19, says the only reason you get divorced is for adultery. Right? Okay, why? Because there was something really, really important about not lying. Lying, what do you mean, coach? For better, for worse, for richer and poorer. You took an oath. What makes an oath? What does that have to do with it? How many people do you know who swear an oath and don't pay any attention to it? Oh, I'm getting into the weeds there. Don't mean to. Anybody besides me? I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad. Anybody besides me remember being in high school and having a classmate and talking to your parents about the classmate doing something, and parents, mom would say, well, honey, his parents are divorced. Anybody remember that? You remember when that was rare? Divorce was rare. And wasn't Ronald Reagan, help me out, who in California came up with no-fault divorce, right? Yes, yes. Now, I'm not trying to take you the wrong way, because I understand this. I can understand why somebody would want to get divorced. I understand it. But we do have to understand this, that divorce is very, very destructive, right? Really, really destructive if you have children, especially if you have children. Now, what made it wrong? Can I take you on a journey here? Can I take you on a journey? There was a day when most of America was Christian. And the reason most of America was Christian is because we obeyed the laws of God, which we know what the laws of God, we know what the laws of God. Spence, see if you can pull those up there real quick, Ten Commandments. Don't go away. This is going to make sense for you here in a second. Ten Commandments. We know what they are, right? And I always try to tell people this when you look at the Ten Commandments. Remember this, the first four commandments are always about your relationship with God. No other gods before me. Don't make any idols. Don't take my name in vain. And remember the Sabbath day. But the next, that's four, are your duties to God. That's when they asked Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? He answered, well, there's only two. You guys remember that? They went to Jesus and said, what's the greatest commandment? He said, no, dude, there's only two of them. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. That's first four. Second's like the first. Love your neighbors yourself. So on those two things are all the law written, all the law. Cool? And what's the second tablet? Honor your father and mother. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't covet. By the way, five of those are still against the law, aren't they? Five of them still against the, well, maybe not honor your father and mother. But you can't murder. Can't commit adultery. Well, can you? Adultery's not illegal, isn't it? Can you steal? Well, you can get away with stealing. Is it right? Is adultery right? Well, you can get away with it. And by the way, just curious, not trying to step on anybody's toes, just show you how far we've fallen. Lord, do I have to say it? Okay, I'll say it. There was a day when if you got divorced and remarried, the church threw you out, said you're committing adultery. Does anybody remember those days other than me? Huh? But you already made a vow. Forever, better, for worse, with this person, you broke the vow, and you got married again, made another vow, couldn't go to church. Okay, I'm not trying to bang you over the head on that. But I want to take you on a journey so you understand exactly what's happened to us, okay? I'm going to try to talk fast. Okay, here's what happened. 1947, Supreme Court. Hey, Spencer, boy, I'll give you 75 cents. Pull up... Mayflower Compact. Because, folks, there's such a thing as organic law. Oh, man, Spence, I'm sorry. So stay right there. What's organic mean? What does organic, something that is organic, what is it? What is something that is organic? Something that is organic is pertaining to an organ, produced by organs, instrumental, acting as instrument of nature,
Organic means it just grows out of nature. It naturally grows out of nature. It's organic, right? A man has a sexual relationship with a woman. They produce a child. That child gets married, has a sexual relationship with his wife, and produces a child. That's organic, right? So our laws were organic. Our laws all come from our Creator, organic. He started the whole thing. He planted Adam and Eve. In the name of God, the Mayflower Compact, folks, organic law, okay? The first establishment of law. You guys know what happened with the pilgrims, right? They got on the boat. They hated what King James or whoever that king was, King Charles, whatever guy that was in there. They hated him. They hated his laws. They didn't want to live under those laws. And a bunch of them said, listen, let's get on a boat and let's get the hell out of here. Let's sail someplace else and let's start our own country. So that is then before they got off the boat, they signed what they called the Mayflower Compact. All right, Spencer, for the slow learners, what's a compact, Spencer? No, it's not a, no, it's not a small car. It's not a small car. A compact is joined, held together. An agreement, a contract between parties, a word that may be applied in a general sense to any covenant or contract between individuals. So listen, so we have to have an organic contract, an organic, in other words, what was the first one? Well, the first one was the Ten Commandments, right? And then all law grew off of the Ten Commandments. Don't murder, and they changed, you know, they made changes in the law, manslaughter. I know you're tracking with me. Okay. So here, friends, no matter what they try to say to you, it wasn't the Indians. Here's the organic law. This is the heart of all law. And you know, if you're going to destroy something, you got pulled up by the roots, don't you? Anybody pull weeds out? Michelle made me, she got a whip and made me pull weeds the other night out in the flower bed. Maybe pull the weeds. Because you got to pull them out by the root, don't you? And you plant the flowers there. In the name of God, amen. We, who's written under here, loyal subjects of our dread sovereign king, not dread, I mean, oh, no, him, dread mean honorable, sovereign king, James, by the grace of God, of Great Britain, France, yeah, blah, 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 having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith. What? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did this for the advancement of the Christian faith. And by virtue hereof, do enact, constitute, and frame such just and equal laws, ordinances, acts, constitution, and officers from time to time as shall be thought most meet and convenient for the general good of the colony, until which we promise all due submission and obedience. Meaning what? Look, when I got off the boat, there were Lutherans, Methodists, Presbyterians, probably not, but they weren't all. He said, listen, we're all serving the same God, okay? All serving the same God. All, everybody here, when you get off the boat, you have to sign this in order to get off the boat, okay? So organic law in America is the Bible. In the name of God, amen. We whose names are undertaken, the world, I dread, blah, 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 having undertaken for the glory of God and advancement of the Christian faith. Okay. Spencer, see how good you are. Pull up the Declaration of Independence. Say, well, Coach, you can't pull up the Declaration of Independence. It wasn't a government then. I know there wasn't. There was a government because we just got it. We just heard about it from the Mayflower. We just heard about it. Do you know that? Oh, I got so much to share with you. Do you know that the 13 original colonies were all set up by denominations? I didn't even bring that out. Maybe I'll get into that. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When, of course, human events becomes necessary in one person, bound in seven. You guys, real these truths to be self-evident. All men created equal, endowed by the Creator. Certain inalienable rights, among them are life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and secure these rights. Government sends human men, deriving just powers from the consent of the governed. And then when any form of government becomes destructive, it sends the people to order the body. Okay, boom. So, hey, Spencer, am I doing okay? Somebody, is this boring? I mean, this is so important for us to understand. So, hey, Spencer, pull up real quickly. I probably don't have it. Religion of the 13 colonies. Because they tell us as religion and politics, separation between church and the state. Church,
15. What was the religion of the American colonies? 13 original colonies. What were they? Let's see. Surprising diversity, really. What is that, Spence? Hey, tell us. Hey, look. Hey, folks. Separates church and state. No, come on, man. I'm sorry. I don't have this better. Each state. Does it tell us what each state was? Somewhere it does. Trust me. Thank you. Okay. Trust me. Okay. Church of God, Church of Zing. Hey, Maryland was Baptist. Okay. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Trust me. Okay. I got them Quakers. Folks, they organize the states by denominations. If we don't get this, we don't get it. See, there was no separation between the church and the state. What they meant by the separation of church and state is that this would not be a Catholic president, wouldn't be a have to be a Baptist president, wouldn't be a Lutheran president, huh? Because then it was all the Church of England. Remember they got away. They fled England because why? The king was the head of the church and the head of the government, and they said that sucks. We don't ever want that to happen again. So they came to America and said, ain't going to be no king here, and we're going to have 13 colonies. There they are, 13 colonies. Connecticut was Puritan. Delaware didn't have any established religion. Georgia was Anglican. Maryland, Anglican. Massachusetts, Puritan. New Hampshire, Puritan. None in New Jersey. New York was Anglican. North Carolina, Anglican. Pennsylvania, none. Rhode Island, none. South Carolina, Anglican. Virginia, Anglican. Yeah, you get it? So when they said there was a separation between the church and the state, they meant you don't have to be Anglican. You don't have to be Church of England. You can be Baptist. You can be whatever you want. Whatever you and your colony decide, that can be the established religion in your state. However, the individual can be whatever they want to be. They can be whatever they want to be because there's freedom of religion. So you can be a Baptist and you can move to Massachusetts, even though they're Puritan. And the government isn't, you with me? That's what they meant by the separation between the church and the state. Church, religious, denominations. It should have said the separation of denomination and state. But they understood what they were saying. God, I hope you don't think this is boring, because I'm going to tell you something. If you carry this truth, you go to church, there won't be, if there are 100 people in your church, there won't be three that understand what I'm sharing with you today. They don't get it. Each state was established according to religious belief. Churches, religions. So all of the Anglicans, see, Pennsylvania ended up becoming, what did Pennsylvania end up becoming, Brett? Do you know? Anybody know what do they call them? What do they call the people in Pennsylvania?
Not sure, Coach.
Quakers. They were Quakers. Quakers meeting had begun. No more laughing, no more fun, no more chewing gum. First one dared to crack a smile, asked to walk a half a mile. But I read Quakers. What? Yes. You didn't have to be a Quaker, but that was where the Quakers went. With me? Pete Trombley is put in there. Vermont was a former Protestant Congregationalism, Presbyterianism. The point of the separation between church and state is you didn't have to belong to that denomination, but they were all Christians. Now, you didn't have to be a Christian, but you had to follow Christian law. So what are you talking about, Willis? Well, what makes stealing wrong? What makes stealing wrong? Ten Commandments. What makes lying wrong? What makes cheating wrong? The Ten Commandments. Right? So then we got into this argument. I'm heading somewhere. Stay with me. What they called the separation between the church and the state. And that meant not that we weren't Christian anymore, but people didn't want to be Baptist, didn't want to have to live in Maryland and be Baptist when they were Lutherans, or they didn't have to live in North Carolina when they were Quakers. So in other words, they took the whole idea of the 13 original colonies, which were set up according to denomination. This is so clear. The Supreme Court said state. They didn't say separation between the government and religion. They said the state and religion. Why? Because the states were their own government. And the Supreme Court said, you can't, hey, Virginia, you can't make everybody Church of England. That was a separation church and state. Oh, wait a minute. Well, you said, God, I never knew that. I never knew. Wait, Hank, somebody help me out here. What's it say on there? Oh, right in the back. Sorry, it's green. In God we trust. Which God? Oh, well, not the Church of England. Certainly not Baptists and not Luke. Do you understand, folks? Do you understand what they meant by establishment? Okay, so I'm taking it on a trip. I'm going to do it really, really fast. So in 1947, a lawsuit makes it to the U.S. Supreme Court. And it was called Everson versus the Board of Education. Stay with me. It's going to be long. It's going to be fast. It's going to be quick. And what the separation of church and state was significantly shaped by 1947 Supreme Court, Everson versus the Board of Education. And in Everson versus the Board of Education, to get at the bottom of it, Everson was a taxpayer, challenged the law, arguing that his money went to schools of a different religion. In other words, let's say Everson was a Baptist and he didn't like his money going to pay for the daggone Lutherans. That's what the separation between the church and state was, that America would not be under any one denomination. Okay? It's called the separation of church and state. 1947, I'm going to take you on a journey here. This is where America went to hell. What year is this? Been a long time since 47, hasn't it? Been a long time. Are things the same? Anyway, okay. So they told us that there was a separation between the church and the state. And we all agree. By the way, only 5-4. It was only 5-4. Meaning what? New Jersey, New Jersey couldn't be a Methodist-only state. Nope. You couldn't go to New Jersey and they make you be a member of the Methodist Church. No, there's a separation between the church and the government. By the way, they said state because it was about, remember, the states were there by denominations. Words mean things. When you hear about the state, you're not thinking about Washington, D.C. Is it separation between the church and Washington, D.C.? No, it's separation between the church and the state. Meaning Lutherans, Baptists, Methodists, Presbyterians, Catholics were all welcome in that state. Whatever that state would be, Ohio, Pennsylvania. No longer is Illinois, well, they weren't one of them. No longer is Pennsylvania all Quaker. Church and state. Words mean things. Words mean things. And understand this also. Time means things, right? We would make different laws today on immigration today, wouldn't we? And what they made before, when we see what the hell's going on here? Well, actually, we just want to enforce. Okay, so 1947, they said there was a separation between the church and state. So then we have something called stare decisis. Spencer, maybe you can pull that up. God, I got to hurry. Stare decisis, Spencer, pull that up. Stare decisis, S-T-A-R-E. Decisis, decision, stare decisis. There it is. What does that mean? And it says it's a legal doctrine meaning to stand by things decided. Stare decisis means we've already decided that. So if a case comes to the Supreme Court regarding religious liberty, they say we've already decided that. That's stare decisis. Already been, okay? So because of stare decisis, because the courts ruled in 1947 that there was a separation between the church and state, that becomes legal precedent. And then all law is built upon that previously decided case, separation between the church and the state. By the way, we're all for that, aren't we? We're all for that. But there's no separation between religion and the government. There's no separation between that. Between religion and government. No. Okay, so hang on. So in 19, what's his trail, okay? 1947, separation of church and state. And then the Luciferians, man, they got all after it, huh? And then in 1962, what did they do? Poem number two. Well, in 1962, because there's a separation between the church and state, they came up with Ingo versus Vital, which says what? No school prayer. No school prayer. Why? Because they've already said there's a separation between the church and the state. So the dumbasses on the Supreme Court said, well, if there's a separation between the church and the state, then my goodness, we can't have those people all praying to the same God. Well, there's no God. That atheism crept in. Come on. Atheism crept in 1962. Banned state-sponsored school prayer. 40 years later, not even 40 years later, I get sued for praying with our football team. Because of that, the Supreme Court banned state-sponsored school prayer. Nobody voted on it. Nobody. In fact, what was it, a 5-4 decision? What is it written? Does it say what it was? 5-4 decision? And I told 8-1. I'm sorry, 8-1 decision. And when I was getting sued by the ACLU, and they asked if I made kids pray, I said, how the hell do you make kids pray? What do you mean I made them pray? You can't make somebody pray. We said the Lord's Prayer before the football game. Oh, yeah, but coach, you're not allowed to. Why am I not allowed to do that? Because we're already ruled in Everson versus the Board of Education that the school's paying the citizens of the town. They're paying for that. You can't make their kid pray as if you could make somebody. I've got to get going here because I'm showing you what's happened to us. Okay. The average person right now in America believes there's a separation between the church and the state. And there is. But the state is under the church. Oh my God, I can't believe we can't see. Okay, so then what happens then? So all of a sudden they said, hey, separation between the church and state. And SCOTUS says, that's it. Good one. No more prayers. No more school prayers. Okay, that's where we are. Following the evolution, stare decisis, previously decided cases. All right. So then, well, they won that one. They said, well, how about old Abington versus Shemp, huh? 1963, a year later. What did Abington versus Shemp say? No Bible reading in the schools. Hey, friends, are you following the trail from where America began? Huh? To glory of God, amen, for the advancement of the Christian faith. That's where America began, folks. And 500 years later, now they're saying, you can't make them say a prayer. Huh? That's illegal. That's Abington versus Shemp, 1963. The number four, Ingo versus Vital. I'm sorry. Ingo Vital is when they banned school prayer. Can't have school prayer. Showing you the trail here. And then it took them 14 years later. I'm hurrying up here because I'm running out of time. To get old Mr. Stone and Graham in there. What? Yeah, number five. Stare decisis, previously decided case. The Supreme Court said, okay, since there's a separation between the church and state, hell, we got to get those Ten Commandments off the wall. We got to get those off the wall. And so they did. They said, well, there's a separation between the church and state. Who are you to push your morality on me? And schools are putting up the Ten Commandments. Well, get them down. Get those things down. Why? Bible actually, I don't have time. Bible actually, or the decision actually said, because the kids might actually read them and follow them. I ain't making it up. 1980. I was teaching school in 1980 when they ruled. This is all modern day stuff. One more, then we'll get on. Oh, I missed one. I got it out of line. Remember, separation between the church and state meant who are you to tell me what I can do? Who are you to judge me? Who are you to tell me what I can do with my own body? And based on that stupid, stupid ruling, remember, who determines what's right and what's wrong? What's the standard? So in 1973, pull that one up there, Spencer number six. They said you can murder a baby. Why can you murder a baby? Because there ain't no standard. They just call it, just don't call it murder. Just call it abortion. Because, by the way, those women are out there screwing like little rabbits because we've taken the Ten Commandments off of the wall. We no longer teach morality in school. And so they just become little, they just screw. And they don't want any accountability, by the way. The idea of having children with God's idea, his commandment to be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth. And they told us to get married so that a child could be raised in a moral environment. And then the court said in 73, sorry, man, good, you can kill those things. Here's the incredible thing. What was the science you suppose in 1973 to the science we have today regarding the human life inside of a mother? Then they overturned Roe versus Wade. But they didn't overturn Roe versus Wade because it was murder. No, they overturned it because what? It was states' rights. Go back to the state. Let the state decide whether or not murder is okay. But you don't call it murder. You call it choice. Wow, this is good, isn't it? I'm heading one more place. One more place. I'm going to need a couple days here. So point number seven. Federal courts said secular humanism is a religion. And by the way, it's the religion of America, secular humanism. And what is secular humanism? The idea that man is God and can determine his own destiny. He can determine what's right and wrong. There are no rules. There are no regulations. Secular human. America has become secular. Spencer, that'd be a good word. Look up secular again. Are we doing okay out there? Huh? This is a lot. Secular means what? Pertaining to this present world. So in schools, you're only allowed to teach pertaining this secular world. You're not allowed to talk about through life to come, going to heaven, going to hell, sin. Not allowed to talk about any of that stuff. However, somehow along the line, they determined that racism was wrong. Racism is wrong. Speaking out against homosexuals, that's wrong. So judging what they don't want judged, that's wrong. That's wrong. They judge you. They judge you, but you can't judge them. See, you with me? Oh, my goodness, this is deep. This is deep. Okay. I'll take my breath, catch my breath, because I got a really, really good video I want to show you. I haven't even got into humanism. Time out. What makes something right? Who said killing somebody's wrong? Who said raping somebody's wrong? Well, society does, Coach. What? What do you mean society does? Does society say killing a baby is wrong? Well, half of us do. Half? Oh, you religious guys? Hey, there's a separation between church and state. You can't push your morality on me. See how the game's played? You get how it's played? Forever and ever, and I'm not criticizing everybody. Whatever you legalize, you get more of. Anybody out there other than me, have any of your classmates had to get married? Why did they have to get married? Because they couldn't kill the baby. And there's still an idea that sex outside of marriage is wrong. If you had sex outside of marriage and you got the woman pregnant, you got married. You had friends that got married, had to get married. What do you mean you had to get married? Yeah, you had to get married. Why? Well, she's pregnant. So kill it. Oh, okay. So as soon as they're able to kill babies, then they didn't have to worry about sex outside of marriage anymore. They gave you the pill. Body autonomy. See what's going on. I'm not making a value judgment on you. If you receive it as a value judgment, I don't even know what to tell you. I'm going to stop there because I don't want to get into the next part. I'm going to open up. What say you? Now, hey, no wonder they want a separation between the church and state. Because that's not really what they want, folks. They want a separation between morality and state. Who are you to tell me what I can do? Really, every law we have in America is just a man-made law. When they went to Jesus, said, hey, Jesus, your daddy came up with a whole bunch of laws there. Huh? What are we supposed to do? Spencer, maybe you can find that. Well, Jesus says there's only two laws. There's only two laws. No, your daddy said there's 10 of them, man.
pounding it on the school walls and sticking them up everywhere. Yeah, your daddy said there's 10 of them. Jeez, no, dude, no. That was the old time. Jesus said, there's only two. Hey, Spencer, go to verse, go back at Grapevine. I'm going to send you $2 more. Go back, just a couple, just go back 3 verses. Okay, but when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. Oh, yeah, the legal folk. Then one of them said, which was a lawyer, isn't that something? Huh? Isn't that something? I love the Bible. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, had to make sure you got that in there, right? Asked him a question saying, Master, what's the greatest commandment in the law? Look, hey, trying to show you the lawyers are crooked. Hey, Master, what's the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your mind. And this is the first and a great commandment. And the second's like it. Love your neighbors yourself. If you love your neighbors yourself, you won't lie, you won't steal, you won't covet, you won't commit adultery, you won't rape them. If you love your neighbor like you love yourself, you won't do any of those things. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. How many commandments are? 10 commandments? Nope. 2. Is what you did hurting somebody else unjustly? That's wrong, dude. Man, oh man. I wonder if your pastor could teach this. Okay, I'm going to, golly, 40s. I'm sorry, it's been so long. I'm going to share some of this. I got more tomorrow. Come on in. Somebody come on in. Throw cold water on it. Throw gasoline on it, whatever. And it happened in your life, in our generation, they criminalized Christianity. They criminalized Christianity in our generation. If it feels good, do it. Tune in, turn on, drop out, right? Huh? Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Kevin. Come on in.
I would ask you right now, Coach, quit apologizing. You're speaking what's actually happening and what's happened. Don't apologize about it.
I'm not apologizing. The reason I apologize, Kevin, is people already know that and they want to move on down. We already know all that. So that's why I say that, Kevin. Because most of you don't know this. Go ahead, Kevin. Anybody, come on in.
No, you don't have. I was just saying.
People are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. We believe today that there's a separation between the church and state. And that, hold your ears, that is bull hockey. There is no separation between the church and the state. There is no separation between morality and individuals. There is no separation. We all obey those same laws. I got this other video I want to show you. I don't have time to do it. Should I do it right now? Okay, I'll do it right now. Pull up number 11. Pull up number 11. I don't know if we'll have time. Okay, now Spence, make it bigger. It's 14 minutes, and believe it or not, we can get this at 1.75 speed. I do not know who this woman is. The Alliance for Responsible Citizenship, 1.75. Are you sitting down? This is going to take you about 7 minutes. This is a boom. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Well, I am Britain's strictest headmistress, so I need to start sitting up straight and all eyes on me. A few weeks ago, we all saw the same footage. A young man called Henry Novak, barely out of childhood, handcuffed on the ground, begging the police for help. And what followed was the confusion of our commentators as they struggled to explain how our young police officers sworn to protect the public could behave in such a way. No one seemed to have a convincing answer. But when you spend a lifetime in schools, it's pretty clear what's going on. Those young police officers are not a special case. They're collateral damage, and the pattern runs far further afield than policing. Last September, Charlie Kirk was shot, and within hours, young people were celebrating all over the internet, despite the fact that his two little children would have to grow up without their father. Many of us looked on in disbelief. What has happened to the moral core of our young people? Something has changed profoundly in how our young people see the world. Those police officers were not evil. They were not incompetent. They were terrified, terrified of being seen as racist. Charlie Kirk held views young people find objectionable, and so his death was cause for celebration. Henry Novak's attacker was a brown man, so the police's deepest instinct to protect the victim was overridden by their most powerful fear, being accused of racism. The police are not special. They're what some of our young people have become so consumed by white guilt that they will do crazy, irrational, and inhumane things rather than risk being seen as racist. Unless we try to explain this change in our moral core and the moral core of our young people and why we are witnessing this culture change across many Western countries, we cannot pretend to care about the West. Our profound lack of interest in the moral values surrounding our children has caused our civilizational collapse. The reason the younger generation see things as they do is because they have been taught to view people in two camps, those who are oppressed and those who are oppressors. And in their eyes, Charlie Kirk was an oppressor, so his death did not warrant grief. The man who killed Henry Novak belonged to the oppressed class, so the police's job was to protect him, not the dying man on the ground. This is not cruelty or incompetence. This is white guilt. And we are the ones who have taught this to our children. We, the boomers, the Gen Xers, the older millennials, we are responsible for not teaching our children the difference between right and wrong. We are the ones who immersed our children in a culture of victimhood, which is at odds with the culture of personal responsibility we all grew up in, a culture we've very stupidly taken for granted. As little as 40 or 50 years ago, the bedrock of traditional small-c conservative values that built the West were commonplace in our schools and in our general culture. One of my teachers at my school always tells me about his grandfather, a man who, no matter how ill he was, never missed a single day at work, yet always had time to teach his grandson how to be a better version of himself. No quiet quitting for him. When he retired after 50 years with the same company, he was so proud of his company letter thanking him for his service that he gave it to his grandson. Once upon a time, we all knew that traditional values gave us a chance at a meaningful life. All the grandmothers knew it, all the pastors knew it, even the teachers knew it. So why don't our young people know it now? We boomers, Gen Xers, and older millennials think school is just about teaching algebra. Your kid's science teacher not so good? No big deal. Just get the kid a tutor. And sure, they're on social media, but we had TV, and we assume they're the same. Parents are busy working, and well, your own parents didn't war game your upbringing. It just sort of happened somehow. You grew up without too much effort, and you turned out just fine. You know the difference between right and wrong. So why would you war game the upbringing of your own children? Because raising a kid in the 21st century is a different order of magnitude of task. We have taken for granted the values from our elders, and we have missed the fact that we are the elders now. The only reason the Sex and the City liberalism of the 1990s was fine was because we were anchored by the small-c conservatism of our parents and our grandparents. Do you ever wonder why Gen Z behaves so differently in the workplace? Not all of them, sure, but we all know they tend to be more performative than older generations, tend to value feelings more, and don't really embody the small-c conservative values of duty to others or real sacrifice instead of the performative kind. Instead, young people swim in a culture of instant gratification and live your best life. You do you. Be who you want to be. And if you think Gen Z is bad, just you wait till you see Gen Alpha. The culture shift comes from what children learn at school and online. Ask any young person what history they learned at school, and they'll tell you, Hitler. Ask them what else? Slavery. Ask them what else? American civil rights. In fact, what little they know of history will be all about black and brown people fighting for equality against the white man, women fighting men for the vote, gay and trans people fighting for various rights. Our young people have been taught that history is simply one long story about various groups struggling under the oppressive dead white man. Out with Dickens, Shakespeare, Kipling, and Wordsworth. We must decolonize. History is taught through an oppressor lens. The triangular slave trade, white men held the power. What about Britain ending the slave trade? More than a quick mention, if at all? No. What of the Arab slave trade that lasted three times as long as the triangular slave trade? No. Okay, so GCSE history in Britain is often taught as migration through time. So the idea that Britain has always been a land of immigrants is embedded in our children's heads. Most schools would prefer to concentrate learning about the tiny number of black people who existed in Tudor England over a thorough analysis of England's break from Rome. Medieval history becomes her story and is told through the eyes of Eleanor of Aquitaine, because after all, she was a woman. Not to mention weeks on King Mansa Musa of Mali, because he was a black Muslim. His bearing on British institutions, laws, and faith is non-existent. And the fact that he is said to have been the richest man in history, thanks in part to his massive slave-owning society, is a detail somehow.
I'm sorry to play it so fast. Put it in the chat. Put it in the chat. And what she is saying is we have stopped teaching morality. I'm okay, you're okay. By the way, we have churches that don't even talk about morality anymore. As I said the other day, what are we going to do? The whole creation's groaning, waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God to show up and say, I'm sorry, but that is wrong. Stop it! Morality. Morality above education. What did Teddy Roosevelt, Spencer, see if you can dig it. Dig it up. Teddy Roosevelt said that to educate a child and not educate him in morality is to educate a menace to society. To teach people to be smarter without teaching them to be righteous is dangerous business. And we are teaching, what are we teaching? A moral education. To educate a person in the mind, but not in morals, is to educate a menace.
Amen.
That's it, isn't it? Isn't that it? That's it. I think about my grandchildren, our grandchildren. How God.
how hard Michelle and I would fight for the morality. Somebody trying to, I can't even imagine seeing somebody trying to teach my young grandson sex education. At 13, 14. So he knows what to do with a penis, but doesn't have any idea how to control it. You teach your child to be chaste, be a virgin when they get married, and put them in public school where they're doing it like doggies, and we understand why we're in the mess we're in. Somebody say amen, so I know I got a friend out there. The church is the worst. The church is the worst.
Amen.
Why in the hell can every church have its own school? Why can't they? Are we so stupid that we think only trained teachers can educate your child? Are you really that stupid? You mean to tell me you couldn't put a video in front of your child that would teach them chemistry? Algebra, geometry. You couldn't sit them down and put a video up there? But they can't do that. Do you know why? We'll use a bad word. Because they tax your ass to death. They give it to the schools, and then both mommy and daddy got to work because they can't afford to stay home and educate the children.
Amen.
What a deception this has been, folks. What a deception. And if we think that we're going to rescue America with secular education, God help us. Paying for it. Can you believe in America today? Where is the Christian leader who will go to government and say, listen, I'm starting a Christian school and I want all my tax dollars and the tax dollars of every child in that school to come to our school. I don't want more money going to the public school where they teach things that we don't even believe. We're starting a school and we want the tax dollars to follow. Why is there not a movement to do that? Do pastors really think the schools are good? Do they really think that the schools are good? I look at what's going on. I'm about out of time. I look around. There's 10, 11 schools around us. People say, oh, I'm going to send our kid to this school because they got really good schools. Yeah, they do. They got kids that go to college and don't know crap. They know all the humanism. They're really good at that. I want to homeschool them, but I can't homeschool them because I got to go to work. And I got to go to work and earn money because I got to earn money to pay to the schools to poison my children. Come on, somebody say amen. That's what we're dealing with. And not one pastor out of 20. You mean the pastors in America can't get together and go to their elected officials and say, we want Christian education money to go to Christian schools. Christian schools should be free. Can't do that. Why? Oh! Well, there's a separation between the church and the state, coach. We're going to teach your children secular values. We're going to teach them that sex before marriage is okay. And getting a girl pregnant isn't any big deal. You can just murder the baby. And then if you get tired of being in that relationship, even though you said for better, for worse, for richer, and poor, you can just go ahead and get a divorce. It's called no fault, coach. It's called no fault. And we don't want to be judgmental here. We want to love people. We want to show them the love of Jesus. And as a result, there is no standard of righteousness. No. In fact, the churches get bigger and bigger and bigger by floodlights and good music. And the kids in that school are getting pregnant just like everybody else. Whole creation's groaning, waiting for us to show up. See you tomorrow.